Morning, everyone. That's the microphone on, and that's the pointing cowie on, and now the glass of water. So over the last few weeks, we've been looking at some of the stories in the Gospels around the crucifixion of Jesus. Steve told us about the repentant criminal on the cross, while Jeff introduced us to the Roman centurion. And now we're looking at another piece in the jigsaw, this little incident involving Jesus, his mother, and John the disciple. This is what it says. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there, and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. So where does this piece fit into the jigsaw? Well, different Gospels give us different pieces, so it's a case of fitting it all together. We know from Mark that Jesus was crucified at the third hour, which was 9 a.m. The soldiers cast lots for his clothes. The two men crucified with Jesus threw insults at him, but then one thought better of it and repented. At the sixth hour, which would be noon, darkness came over the whole land. So this incident must have happened before that, as it says Jesus saw his mother there. And then the darkness lasted until the ninth hour when Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Then he's given a drink of wine vinegar, after which he shouts out, "It is finished," and commends his spirit to his Father. So I think this is the order of events, and you can see where our bit of the jigsaw fits. So the passage begins with four women standing near the cross. Now, I must confess that I've never taken much notice of these ladies. That's very sexist of me. But you do tend to skip over verse 25 to get to the action in verse 26. So to make amends, let's have a look at the four ladies. Now, each of the Gospels mentions a group of women, but the four writers select different names. Matthew says, "Many women were there. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs." They were part of the logistic support group for Jesus and his disciples. They are there in the background of the Gospels, and we get occasional glimpses, but it's only now at the cross that they come into focus. And Matthew picks out Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. Well, that's an odd way to describe, but why doesn't he just say the wife of Zebedee? So I've called her Mrs. Zebedee for short. Mark says some women were watching in Galilee. These women had followed him and cared for his needs. Many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem were also there. And he names Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the Younger and of Joseph, and Salome. Luke's account doesn't mention names at this point. He just says that the women who had come with Jesus from Galilee followed Joseph of Arimathea when he took away the body of Jesus and laid it in the tomb. And on the first day of the week, they went to the tomb and found it empty and then told the disciples. And it's only at that point that Luke gives us names. Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James. And finally in this passage, John mentions Mary, Jesus' mother, Mary's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. Now, if you have a really ancient copy of the King James version of the Bible, the name Clopas is given as Cleopas, and that's the name of one of the two disciples who were going home to the village of Emmaus after the momentous events of the first Easter Sunday, and Jesus came up and walked along with them. And it's quite possible that the second unnamed disciple was Cleopas' wife. So it's tempting to think that this lady at the cross was the same person. But in more recent translations of the Bible, even the King James Version, the name appears quite clearly as Clopas, and it's spelt differently in the Greek. Cleopas has the letters E-O, while Clopas has the letter Omega, the last letter of the Greek alphabet. So probably not the same person. Though names do get spelt differently, as I know only too well. What I think is more likely is that this Mary, Mrs. Clopas, is the same as Mary, the mother of James and Joseph. And that's because she's always mentioned in connection with Mary Magdalene. Both Mark and Matthew say that it was those two who went with Joseph to the tomb and saw where he had buried the body of Jesus. And they seem to have been best mates. Perhaps they were the activists among the other women. So I think we can simplify the chart. Now, Luke mentions Joanna, but he's previously identified her as the wife of Chusa, manager of Herod's household. That's in chapter 8, verse 3. So she can't be identified with any of the other ladies. But what an interesting life she must have had. So no wonder we know so much about what Herod was thinking. Well, then there's Salome. And some commentators think that she was Mrs. Zebedee, which would simplify the chart even further. I don't think she was the same Salome who danced for Herod and demanded the head of John the Baptist. And that leaves Mary's sister, the aunt of Jesus. Now, she's not mentioned anywhere else in the gospel story. She just suddenly appears here at the cross. Now, again, some scholars think that she could be Salome, Mrs. Zebedee. And that raises the interesting possibility that James and John, the sons of Zebedee, were actually first cousins to Jesus. And that would explain why Jesus gave his mother into the care of John. And that all seems very neat. But I've done enough family history research to know that just because someone is in the right place at the right time does not make him my great-grandfather. So I think the jury's out on that one. But we need to add another line to the chart. Where do the gospel writers say these women were standing? From a distance. Viewed from a distance. Stood at a distance. And then John, near the cross. It seems to me that John is describing something a bit different from the other three writers. So I would like to suggest that there were two distinct groups of women. One group, which was quite large, included all the women who had come up from Galilee. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were with them. And they were watching at a distance. Maybe they were up on the city wall looking down at the crucifixion. This was sensible. Just think for a moment what was happening around the cross. There was a crowd of people shouting insults at Jesus, hurling insults, as Mark puts it. No doubt many turned out to watch an execution, just as people in this country used to go to watch public hangings. What was it you said, Ian? Was it my face in the crowd? Was it my fist raised? Some of them might have been disappointed nationalists who expected a Messiah who would lead a great rebellion against the Roman Empire, another warrior king like David. Well, so much for this Messiah. The Romans had won after all. There was a detachment of Roman soldiers there who were supposed to keep order, but they were more interested in splitting up their loot. Luke says they also mocked Jesus. And then there was a group of priests and teachers of the law who sneered at him. He saved others, but he can't save himself. And they were probably keeping an eye out for Jesus' disciples too, so it would have been dangerous to be seen there. As we know that when the disciples met together, they locked the doors for fear of the Jews. So there was no one in sympathy with the dying Saviour. They were baying for his blood. Only a week before, on this day, which the Christian world now celebrates as Palm Sunday, adoring crowds had hailed Jesus as he rode into Jerusalem. And now the only one on his side was a repentant criminal on another cross. So with all this going on, it was a good idea for the women to keep at a distance. But don't underestimate their bravery and loyalty. Just being there was dangerous enough. They had followed Jesus from Galilee, supporting him, listening to his teaching. Some had been healed. And they were disappointed too. We had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel, said Cleopas later. But now he was dying. And it was death to their hopes too. And they still did not understand that what seemed like defeat was actually all part of God's plan. But suddenly, they see Mary, the mother of Jesus, supported by her sister, pushing their way through the crowds to reach the foot of the cross. Well, how did they manage that? Don't underestimate what a determined elderly lady can achieve. Maybe Mary kept saying, "I'm his mother, let me through." So my guess is that Mary Magdalene and the other Mary thought, we can't leave them down there on their own in the middle of that hostile crowd. So the two of them left the big group and went down to join Mary and her sister near the cross. There they found John, since verse 26 tells us that he was standing nearby. Well, that would explain why John includes the two ladies in the group at the cross, where he saw them, while the other gospel writers include them in the bigger group at a distance. They must have known they could not do anything to help Jesus' mother, but they went to stand together with her. And sometimes we may be called upon to face ridicule or worse for our faith. And in other countries, Christians face much worse persecution. Sometimes we need to stand beside those who are being targeted. Remember Paul in 2 Timothy 4 describing his trial in Rome. "At my first offence, no one came to my support, but everyone deserted me. Whereas a man called Onesiphorus searched hard for Paul and was not ashamed of my chains." People who have been in prison for their faith say how much they've been encouraged by the thought that fellow Christians were praying for them. Do you know anyone going through a bad time who you could go and stand beside? So now we have the four women at the foot of the cross. Two family members, one, Mary Magdalene, who had been delivered from demon possession, and one ordinary housewife about whom we know nothing except that she was there. Who was not there? Well, only one of the 12 disciples seems to have been there, as Mark tells us that everyone deserted him and fled. All the other disciples had scattered after Jesus was arrested. Peter followed at a distance, but even he seems to have fallen back after he denied Jesus at the high priest's house. But John is right there at the cross, standing nearby. With typical modesty, he doesn't make much of this, referring to himself, as usual, as the disciple whom Jesus loved. So what was happening while Jesus hung on the cross? Hebrews tells us that the Son is the radiance of God's glory, sustaining all things by his powerful word. And in Colossians 1:17, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. There's no indication that any of that stopped when Jesus came to earth as a man, which means that the baby in the manger at Bethlehem was still sustaining the universe. The man hanging on a Roman crucifix was still sustaining the universe. On top of that, he was making atonement for our sins. Isaiah 53, verse 5. "But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed." On another level, the Son had to deal with separation from the Father. The one God, whose three persons had coexisted throughout eternity past, was now divided. God had spoken from heaven, "You are my Son, whom I love. With you, I am well pleased." Now the Son cries out to heaven, my God, why have you forsaken me?" No other human being has ever known such terror. And thanks to Christ's redemptive work, no other human needs to. Jeff told us how, at the moment of Jesus' death, the veil of the temple was torn in two, symbolizing that the way into God's presence was now open to all who believe. And then on a human level, Jesus was dying a slow and agonizing death. And in the middle of all this, he sees his mother and makes arrangements for her welfare. Joseph, it would appear, had died, so Jesus, as Mary's eldest son, was responsible for her. Mary had other sons, but John has told us in chapter 7 that they did not believe. There's no sign of them at the cross. I suspect that they would have tried to stop Mary going there. So Jesus gives Mary into the care of the one disciple who had followed him to the end. It's a peculiarly tender moment. To Mary, this man is now your son. To John, this is your mother now. In the NIV, Jesus calls Mary, dear woman, but the word dear is not in the original Greek. So it sounds a bit stark to modern ears, addressing your mother as woman. But the best equivalent I can come up with is the medieval practice where all women were called good wife. But Jesus also used this form of address when speaking to the Samaritan woman at the well, the Canaanite woman who asked healing for her daughter, the crippled woman who he healed on the Sabbath, the woman caught in adultery, and Mary Magdalene after the resurrection. Jesus treated every woman with the same respect he gave his mother. I started looking for other mentions of Mary in the scriptures and was a bit surprised at how little we hear about her. Matthew describes the birth of Jesus, but Mary is passive. All the action is with Joseph. Take the young child and his mother, and so on. Later, he records that Mary and her other sons tried to speak to Jesus, but can't get near him. And then Mary is not mentioned again. Mark also mentions the incident with the brothers, but explains that the family had gone to fetch Jesus home. They went to take charge of him, for they said, he is out of his mind. Jesus was just starting his ministry and was drawing huge crowds, and he and his disciples hadn't even got time to eat. So the family must have thought he was off his head, setting himself up as a rabbi. Who was going to mind the shop? And the only mention of Mary's name in the whole of that gospel is when the people of Nazareth ask, isn't this Mary's son? It's Luke who gives us all the details about Mary and events before and surrounding the birth of Jesus. He also describes how Jesus stays behind in Jerusalem after the Passover when he is 12 years old, and Mary and Joseph find him in the temple. Now, John mentions the wedding at Cana and how Mary goes to Jesus when the wine runs out. We're told changing the water into wine was his first miracle. So what does she expect him to do? And this scene at the cross is the only other mention of Mary. So think for a moment how the events of Jesus' life must have appeared to Mary. After all the excitement surrounding his birth and the danger to his life and the escape into Egypt, Mary and Joseph end up back at Nazareth. And it all goes quiet. They have four sons and several daughters. They are well known in the community. They attend the synagogue and go up to Jerusalem for the feasts as prescribed by the law. 30 years pass with only one incident recorded. At some point, Joseph must have died. Mary, we're told, treasured these things in her heart. But she must have started to wonder when the prophecies would be fulfilled. Then John the Baptist appears. The folk are wondering if he's the awaited Messiah. Did Mary wonder too? I thought my son was the promised one. But when Jesus began his ministry, there was more puzzlement. He was going around teaching and healing. But when would he raise an army to free the country from the Roman occupation? I wonder if Mary got to Jerusalem in time to see the triumphal entry. She would certainly be told about it. And then, after 3 years, when she hardly features in the gospel story at all, suddenly she's there at the foot of the cross. And everything seems to have gone wrong. There are only three recorded conversations between Jesus and Mary, and twice he asks her why. There's also an indirect contact when, again, a question is asked. In Luke 2:49, why were you searching for me? This is when Mary says, we have been anxiously searching for you. And 12-year-old Jesus points out, didn't you know that I had to be in my Father's house? But he does go back to Nazareth and was obedient to them. Then in John 2, verse 4, why do you involve me? When Mary tells him the wedding feast has run out of wine. But he does turn the water into wine. Then in Mark 3:33, who are my mother and brothers? That's when they tell him his family are outside looking for him, and he doesn't go with them. I think that question must have hurt Mary. Maybe she recalled what the old man in the temple had said to her so many years ago. A sword will pierce your own soul too. And now here in John 19, verse 26. Dear woman, this is your son. It's as if Jesus is gradually distancing himself from earthly relationships. He had been son, brother, teacher, healer, master. But at the cross, he became the saviour of the world. Now he belongs to all of us. Whoever does God's will is my brother and sister and mother. Mary was addressed by the angel Gabriel as you who are highly favoured. But she was still a sinner who needed salvation, just like the rest of us. And when Jesus died, he bore the punishment for her sin, just as he did for you and for me. This is the power of the cross. Christ was made sin for us, bore the shame, took the loss, so that we, together with Mary, can stand forgiven at the cross. Jesus can no longer be exclusively Mary's son, so he passes that responsibility to his trusted disciple. John accepts the charge. We're told from that time on, he took her into his home, which may mean that he persuaded her to come away from the cross. It must have seemed like the end of the world to the two of them. But the story doesn't end there. Mary's not one of the women who goes to the tomb on the morning of the resurrection, but John sets off at a run when Mary Magdalene alerts the disciples, and he sees the empty tomb and believes. John's gospel specifically says he went back to his home, where we know he had taken Mary. So she was one of the first to know that the Lord had risen. And in Acts 1, we read that Mary was there in the infant church with the disciples and the other women, all joined together constantly in prayer. Amazingly, the brothers were there too. No longer part of the earthly family of Jesus, but now joined with others as part of the growing family of believers. So why is this incident recorded? It's not mentioned in Matthew, Mark, or Luke. The simple answer is that John was an eyewitness, and none of the other disciples were there. I read one commentary which questions why it is there at all, as it feels like an interruption in the main narrative. But John is very selective about what he includes in his gospel. Luke is like an investigative reporter who wrote what he called an orderly account based on oral evidence of witnesses. But John is more of an academic historian who selects stories to prove a point. He may have written his account much later than the other gospels. One of the early church fathers, Clement of Alexandria, says that he wrote to supplement the other accounts. But John himself says in chapter 20, verse 31, that he wrote these things that his readers might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. So if he included this event, then he thought it was an important part of the gospel story. Who are we to argue